Just over a decade ago, Ernest Price stood in the school gymnasium and made an announcement in front of 250 Year 10 students. Okay, so it's not unusual for a teacher to speak to the school, but this announcement was no ordinary directive, but one that would be life-changing. Ernest outed himself as transgender that day and informed everyone he would be beginning a medical transition. On Sunday just gone, International Trans Day of Visibility was celebrated. It's a day dedicated to celebrating transgender people and raising awareness of discrimination faced by transgender people worldwide. To coincide with this, Ernest has released his debut novel, The Pyramid of Needs. It's a darkly funny story about transphobia and family dysfunction. Welcome, Ernest.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Take us back to that day in the school gym. What was that like for you?
I can't believe it's over 10 years ago. That's making me feel very old this morning.
Yes.
As you can imagine, it was fairly nerve-wracking, but I did have a lot of trust in those young people. I'd been their year-level coordinator the year before when they were in year 9, and I had a really strong relationship with many of them. So I trusted them, I think, more than I often trust adults with a disclosure about my identity. And that trust paid off. I'm still in contact with many of those young people today. I actually teach alongside one of them at my current school. So I think whilst it was absolutely nerve-wracking, it was a moment of trust in, I guess, the generosity and capacity of young people, which is something I believe very deeply in.
How wonderful. And it's also scary to note that you are your students are now your colleagues, if you want to feel old.
Absolutely terrifying.
did you confide in any of your students at that stage? Had you already told anyone?
I had not. I had, I guess, that experience that I think many teachers who may fit into a number of marginalised groups, whether they're teachers of colour or queer teachers or trans teachers, where I sort of had students milling around me who themselves were trans or would later come to disclose their gender identity. And I think they had, I guess, their antenna up and were able to find me, but I'd never disclosed it to any other students. I had to my colleagues previously, which was probably infinitely more terrifying than disclosing it to the kids, but not to any students prior to that moment.
Why was it important for you to continue teaching as you went through transition?
I think for me, you know, one of the reasons I went into teaching, I find teachers tend to fall in one or two camps. You either become a teacher because you had a great experience at school, or you become a teacher because you had a terrible experience at school. And for me, it was unfortunately the latter. I had a really difficult experience at school, and I really struggled, with the exception of one or two wonderful teachers who I had. I really struggled to find, I guess, teachers who I could see myself in. And so for me, remaining in the profession after undergoing a medical and social transition was really important, both because teaching is a big part of who I am and why I get out of bed every day, but also because I think the more diverse our teaching workforce, the better for our students. And I think there's lots of research about that worldwide, whether it comes to cultural diversity or gender diversity, diversity of sexuality, all of those things being in our schools means that there are better outcomes for young people who may fit into one or more of those categories.
How did you find that exposure going through and teaching while you were going through transition? Because it can be variously experienced. It can be tough at times though.
Oh, absolutely. And certainly it was not smooth sailing. And I think, as I guess I alluded to earlier, my experience with adults was probably infinitely more difficult than it was with young people. The young people tended to have the conversation either directly with me or with each other. And so there was a fair bit of accountability and transparency there. With adults, it can be a little bit more difficult, and adults are sometimes more willing, I guess, to hold on to more conservative notions or to, I guess, hold on to prejudices that they may hold. So I certainly had my moments of comments made either directly or online, which were difficult. But in terms of the majority of my experience and most of it with the young people that I work with, it was really positive and affirming to see them accept me for who I was and for, you know, I think Teenagers are many things, but they are certainly good at detecting when you're being inauthentic. And so I think, you know, for them, this was me being authentic, and that was better than hiding who I was.
It's really interesting because this was 10 years ago. Have you seen a marked difference perhaps in that adult community around these sorts of conversations?
I wish I could say it was linear. I unfortunately don't think it has been linear. Certainly things did get a lot better for a 5 or 6 year period after that. I think the last couple of federal elections have been difficult around issues of gender diversity, and that has certainly emboldened those people who may think that transgender people don't have a place in schools. So it hasn't been a linear journey, but certainly, you know, I've had so many wonderful colleagues over the years who have been wonderful champions for myself and for gender diverse young people as well. And those people, I guess, make all the difference in schools.
Going through the challenges that you have, you know, as you described there, you obviously need a really good sense of humour. You've just published your debut novel. It's been described as darkly funny. What's it about?
It is about a family who are estranged. The matriarch of the family, Linda Taylor, breaks a hip in the opening chapter. And Linda's a very independent 70-year-old. She's a wellness influencer online, and she is involved in a pyramid scheme selling vitamin supplements.
It's already funny. Done.
And so she's up in Noosa, estranged from her son Jack, who is a transgender teacher in Melbourne. And after Linda breaks a hip, his sister drags him north to, I guess, reunite with the family. And over the course of a weekend, he has to wrestle with the question of whether or not it was a good idea in the first place to be estranged, or whether those bonds can be remade with his family. So we get a wild ride through some apocalyptic Queensland weather and the kind of delusions that go along with trying to make a living from selling vitamin supplements on the internet.
All right, this is the question. How much of is there truth in this fiction? Was it much based on your lived experience?
Well, as I disclosed when I launched the book last week, I do have lived experience as a transgender teacher. So there is a little of me in Jack, certainly, who's one of the protagonists. And I also have lived experience in the wellness and self-help culture. I was raised very much from the sales of Amway, another pyramid scheme product. So I certainly, unfortunately, have a quite up-close understanding of what that whole world is like.
And Jack Taylor, the high school teacher in this book, describes himself more than once as a kind of transgender Robin Williams. Is that kind of you as well in real life?
I hope that I don't have quite as big an ego as Jack, but I certainly think there is a tendency to walk the line as a teacher. You have to have the confidence to stand up in a room of 30-odd adolescents, as well as the humility to deal with the insults that come back at you every now and then.
Jack also explains how he began his medical transitions and the hurdles to get there. For example, the proof you were playing with cross-gender toys from a young age. Was that also part of your own lived experience navigating this path?
Absolutely. And again, this isn't always a linear pathway, and it differs quite a lot in different jurisdictions across the country. But at the time that I was seeking access to testosterone and to surgery for gender affirmation, there were quite a few hurdles to go through. You had to have reports from a couple of psychiatrists. You had to have doctors who would attest to your gender identification. So there were quite a few hurdles in place. And there was a lot of anxiety that went along with that process, trying to prove that, you know, whatever it meant to identify as a man and how that might have played out across my medical history. And so that certainly informed a lot of Jack's understanding in the book.
There's also a point in the story where Jack, who's about to fly to Noosa to see his parents, spent some time checking trans Facebook groups on the status of airport security technology. Why is this part of the novel so pertinent?
Well, it's actually an experience I had right at the end of the writing process. I'd actually gone through the first couple of drafts with my editor, and I inserted it in at that point because I had flown north from Nam and had that experience a couple of times at the airport where they have increased security screening now, and part of that involves the security officers having to assign you one spot on a gender binary. And if you don't quite fit in that spot, and if certain parts of your anatomy don't quite fit in that spot, it can be quite an awkward process. And it was really important for me, I guess, to get that onto the page. I would love to think sometimes that the hard parts, as it were, of transitioning were behind me, but there are certain points, and airports are one of them, where you are reminded that these are still experiences that you have to deal with every day.
It's so important to get that stuff on the page, isn't it? Because if you haven't had that experience, you're absolutely unaware that that is potentially something that people are going through.
Absolutely. And I certainly, in my research, I guess looking at other airports around the world, was thinking about how that might be amplified. I'm white myself, but I know many of my friends of colour have increased experience of the random bomb testing at airports as well. So I certainly was thinking about how all of those things might come together for some people's experiences. And I do think it discourages some people from flying because it is such a difficult thing to navigate.
There's an instance in the book where Linda, the mother of Jack, refers to Jack as her daughter, misgendering, and also brushing it off as not a big deal. What's been your experience of this?
Yeah, it's a really interesting prospect, I guess, the idea of misgendering within a family and how you deal with, I guess, what that feels like for the person who is misgendered and how people respond to that. So I think for Jack, he's very much protected himself from having to experience this by separating himself from his family. So it's very confronting for him to have to navigate it. And then to have to also navigate his sister's reaction, who tends to minimise these experiences. I think, again, as you alluded to earlier, it's difficult if you haven't experienced this yourself. It can become very difficult to understand, I guess, the magnitude of the way that it might rock someone's sense of themselves. It can also just be really jarring. I think sometimes when I've been misgendered more recently by family members, you know, I'm very clearly present as male and I'm read as male in my day-to-day life. And so it can be really jarring for other people who perhaps would never have considered that you may have anything other than the gender in which you present.
We're speaking with Ernest Price, author of the brand new book, The Pyramid of Needs, just released. Congratulations on getting this debut novel out there. And I should also say to you, happy Trans Day of Visibility for yesterday.
Thank you so much for having me.
Wonderful to speak to you today. Ernest Price there, debut novel, as we said, called The Pyramid of Needs. It's a darkly funny story about transphobia and family dysfunction.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.